The pictures coming out of Iraq playing out on our TV sets and web pages show a government struggling to rebuild itself as others try to tear it down. The reality, that reality, is mirrored in efforts to try and rebuild the scientific infrastructure of the country, whose laboratories and universities were stripped of equipment by looters. Each day, it's a struggle for those scientists who often face bullets before Bunsen burners, as they have become targets of assassins and kidnappers. So what does the future hold for Iraqi science? Iraq's Deputy Minister for Science is here to talk about efforts to boost science and technology and to restore the country's higher education system. For example, the free exchange of ideas is key to doing science. We're going to talk about the new Iraqi Virtual Science Library, which makes thousands of scientific journals available free of charge to scientists over there. And there's another Iraqi program that has plans, if the funding comes through, to train Iraqi scientists in archaeology. Of course, a fitting discipline for a country called the Cradle of Civilization. So we're going to talk with the archaeologist leading that program, as well as documenting what the war has done to valuable archaeological artifacts and excavation sites. And if you'd like to talk about rebuilding science in Iraq, give us a call. Our number is 1-800-989-8255, 1-800-989-TALK. I'll introduce my guests right now. Berhwan Kailani is the deputy minister in the Ministry of Higher Education and Scientific Research in Baghdad. She joins us today by phone from Arlington, Virginia. Welcome to the program, Dr. Berhwan.
Hi. Thank you. Thank you having me.
You're welcome. Okay. Elizabeth Stone is a professor of anthropology at Stony Brook University in Stony Brook, New York. She joins us today by phone from Oxford, England. Good evening. Welcome back to the program, Dr. Stone.
Oh, nice to be here.
Thank you. Dr. Berhwan, can you describe for us what effect the war has had on scientific efforts and institutions in Iraq?
Oh, a good question. Okay. Before starting answering your question, I would like to mention a few things. As you certainly know, the situation of my country and the suffering before April 2003, and of course the challenges faced over the last 3 years. Going through three wars and 13 years of sanctions left its impact on the characteristics of the Iraqi society, of course, on Iraqi educational institutions. So that's why we believe that the reconstruction of the educational institutions will enhance in rebuilding our civil society and, of course, defeating the terrorism. Our educational institutions in the capacity of 22 universities and 3 technical foundations suffer from deterioration of their infrastructures, which was badly affected by the looting and destruction post 2003, mm-hmm. which are yet to receive its share of aid and reconstructions due to the security situation. Despite all that, we are working very hard to maintain our new trends of higher education. What's our new trend is high reliability on foreign developments in science and technology, and of course, strong eagerness to follow the internet development.
Mm-hmm. Okay. It seems that one of the biggest challenges you're facing now, and I mentioned that at the beginning, and I read articles from Science Magazine, other people who've been there, is the security issue, that scientists and professors literally have targets on their back for kidnapping and murder.
This is a really big issue. We are worried quite a lot about it, and government back home is planning to help us out in to put in our professors and, of course, doctors as well, physicians in mm-hmm. Better positions in secure areas, or perhaps finding a solution for keeping those people from being targeted all the time. Mm-hmm. The ones who are targeting those guys, professors and doctors, the ones who are against our new beliefs of being free country, believing in human rights and democracy. So the ones who don't want these three issues to be implemented in Iraq, they are behind our professors. Because if you make higher education or education deteriorated, it affects on the whole society. This is the main the main issue.
Is there a danger that some of your bright scientists may be just leaving the country?
Well, lots of them are leaving, so we are suffering from brain drain now, right now. It's only because of the security situation and our professors being targeted all the time.
Yeah.
It's a very big worry. I mean, it's our main issue to find a solution for it.
Yeah, I can imagine it is. I don't want to get into the next question because we're going to have to take a break. And I want to give everybody, both you and Dr. Stone, a time to give me full answers. So I'm going to let's take our break now. We'll go to a break. We'll come back and talk lots more with Berhwan Kahlani and Elizabeth Stone about science in Iraq. Where does it sit now? What's the state of it? How difficult will it be? We've heard about the security issues of scientists being targeted and just, you know, wanting to leave the country. We'll talk about how to keep them there and how to make science work in Iraq. So stay with us. We'll be right back after this short break. You're listening to Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. We're talking this hour about the state of science in Iraq with my guest, Dr. Berhwan Kahlani, Deputy Minister of Higher Education and Scientific Research in Baghdad, Iraq. Dr. Berhwan, could you pronounce your name for me? I want to make sure I get it right.
It's Berhwan Kahlani.
Kahlani, okay.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. Elizabeth Stone, Professor of Anthropology at Stony Brook University in Stony Brook, New York. Our number, 1-800-989-8255. Dr. Stone, you're involved in a program to rebuild higher education in Iraq. Are you and your U.S. colleagues struggling with these same security concerns?
You know, actually, the security concerns really weren't as much of a problem. The problem for us was that we got a USA grant, one of a very small amount of money that was actually given to higher education back in 2003 for what was supposed to be a three-year project. But fairly early on, they just decided, well, this wasn't very important, so they cut it back to 1 year. And the problem is you can get a certain amount of equipment and books and things like that into Iraq. We were able to do that without too much trouble. What we really needed to do was to do more training programs, because you can't expect, you know, anybody, let alone people living in kind of the nightmare that Iraq has become, to really kind of catch up for what was really 15 years of neglect, really the whole embargo period, without some help. And what we had planned were a series of longer term training programs that, you know, we've been able to do bits and pieces by trying to get other kind of grants from other institutions, but the money simply wasn't there, which got pulled out for what we were trying to do.
We're spending $100 billion a year in the region, and how much money do you need?
Well, I mean, yeah, the particular program that we had, the USAID assigned, I think, $20 million and divided between five universities, and our project was divided between archaeology. I only got about $1.2 million, and environmental health that got more of it during the first year. Yeah, I mean, it doesn't really take that much. I mean, since then I've been able to, you know, write about six grant proposals and gotten about $350,000, which has meant that I could do a training program and work for four people last semester and things. But, you know, you don't really need, you know, that much within that larger context. And higher education, I think, is incredibly important. After all, it's a place where young people hide out during periods of low employment in order to get them their skills up, and that's surely better than having them throwing bombs.
Dr. Kahlani, would you comment on that? Is there enough money going?
Well, actually, I'm very much aware of this program with the USAID's, and the whole money, it was about $20 million dollars. That $20 million dollars went to five universities, American universities, twinning with our universities. I'm aware of Oklahoma work. They were working with five of our universities. The University of Babel was part of it, and specifically archaeology department. But, you know, the thing is, they went through a few training courses and workshops, and then the money ran out. We need a lot more money to finish our projects that we had started with USAID's. This is the main issue. I mean, most of the works that we've done started with 2003. Most of them are halfway through that we haven't finished.
The money was cut off.
Run out. Yeah. But one thing is that money went for many universities, and each university got $4 to $5 million to be spent on 5 or 6 universities in a row in Iraq. You know, we have 22 universities right now. Then we had 18 universities. So all that money was going either, you know, spending here and there, training courses, workshops, traveling around, not having courses, workshops in Iraq because of the security situation, traveling to Beirut, perhaps into Jordan, and those areas. So actually, if I want to talk about archaeology, I was expecting a lot more to be done on our archaeological department in Babel University. You see what I mean? I mean, we need a lot more.
Yeah, I mean, it is, you know.
Let me just say something about that. I had every intention of including Babel University, Qadisiyah University, Erbil University, some of the universities that were just beginning archaeology programs when we got started. And when we got started, we began by working with Baghdad and Mosul, which were the two universities with the long-term programs.
Uh-huh.
Then these other universities began to get started. Part of our plans for the second year was, in fact, to expand in that direction. We did have some people from Qadisiyah at the training program we had in Jordan, and we also invited actually someone from Babel University to go to an Islamic archaeology conference in Istanbul, but I think for some reason he didn't show up, and I don't know quite what happened with that.
Mm-hmm. Hey, archaeology would seem for that region, you know, to be a high priority.
Yeah, it's very important, and you know, we need to give more attention to this subject. And now USIDs, they don't have enough money for higher education this year. I mean, they haven't allocated some money for those projects that we already started, or perhaps for new projects to start with the USIDs.
Mm-hmm.
We hope for some funds for next year.
Well, you were promised.
One of the things we've been told is that they just lost interest in higher education, and you know, it was really frustrating.
Sounds very American.
Yeah, I mean, but it was very frustrating because compared to other types of aid programs, I would argue that the higher education programs managed to find ways around the security problems that kind of blew up in our faces almost immediately. You know, we had training programs that were supposed to be in Iraq. We moved them to Jordan. My understanding is all five of the universities met all of their goals that they had for that first year's of funding and did more than that in spite of the security problems, which isn't the case of any other, you know, anybody else who's getting aid says, oh, it's going to cost us so much more in order to do things.
Mm-hmm. Tell us about, I want to get to the virtual library in a little bit, but while we're talking about archaeology, what is the state of all those archaeological sites that are there, that have been there since, you know, since Saddam Hussein, and then the war, and then the state of those, the looting that took place in the antiquities museums? What's happened there now?
Well, I think the archaeological sites are in a pretty bad way. I'm not sure that the looting is going on with the intensity that it did just after the war, but we have a project right now using high-resolution imagery, which we're doing kind of together with the Department of Antiquities, to try to get a survey of what sites have been looted, you know, where they are, what the situation is. And I mean, the numbers are really pretty frightening. I mean, you can go over a large number of sites, and well over a third of them have, you know, we're talking about 1,500, 2,000 sites that we could look at. Well over a third of them have been looted, and the further you go towards the kind of the Sumerian heartland, the more looting you see. So it's not distributed evenly, and especially the big Sumerian sites, most of them have just been completely destroyed. I mean, the surface just looks like mountains of the moon, and in some cases you even have situations where the looters are not just doing that, but they're tunneling down and going into very early levels. And so disrupting things even more. So the sites are really in a bad shape, and that, you know, the Department of Antiquities has a fairly small kind of police unit. What we're hoping is to be able to give them some at least spatial information so that they can kind of decide where to put the 1,200 men in this very large country where they can be most affected. But and there are also some kind of political problems that are going on. One of the people, and I don't want to identify him any further, who a member of the Department of Antiquities, has been very active in trying to prevent looting. He's actually been in jail for the last 3 months. Even though all the charges have been dropped, the political situation is such that the money that comes in from looting
winds up kind of dominating the local area, and therefore it's kind of impossible for the Department of Antiquities to get him back out again, even though he's completely innocent.
Hmm. Well, when we last spoke over 3 years ago, you were just beginning to get a handle on how the war had affected the looting of the museum there. Have you got any better handle on the museum collections? What has happened to them?
I think we have a general understanding. And the museum probably lost about 10,000 to 15,000 objects.
Wow.
A certain amount of stuff has come back. One of the problems is that there were a couple of different groups who went in there. There was the mob. And then there were some professionals. And the stuff that the professionals took, they went off and took a large number of over 5,000 cylinder seals and small objects. We're really lucky. They had the keys, and they lost them in the dark. If they'd had them, they would have been able to open up cabinets and taken the world's best Islamic coin collection as well as a bunch of other stuff, and they didn't do that. But the mob especially went in through the area that's known as the old storerooms and smashed an enormous amount of stuff, and nobody's really been able to do an inventory of that. Because the museum is not in a very good location. I think last week there was talk about a bunch of people being kind of shot up at a bus station that was within 100 meters of the museum, and today there's talk about fighting in Haifa Street, which is right behind the museum. So in a lot of cases, for security reasons, you know, what the museum is doing is simply really walling off any part of the museum that has collections in it from anywhere from outside in order to try to protect them. The collection should, you know, the worst happen, especially when there are curfews, because that means that none of the staff can be there and the guards can't be there.
So has any of the stuff showed up on the black market that was looted? Is it coming back that way or being bought up? Or
I think there are some. There's a certain number of pieces that were bought by the Italians in Baghdad and returned. Mm-hmm. And some of those do have Iraq Museum numbers on them. Mm-hmm. Mostly, one of the extraordinary things about what's going on with Iraq is because there is actually fairly good international law for a change against trafficking in Iraqi antiquities. It's not showing up in the art markets. So somebody's storing somewhere. There are warehouses that must be groaning at the seams, full of Iraqi material. Because we're probably talking about, with the sites, more Iraqi dirt having been moved recently than had ever been moved before.
Wow.
Archaeological dirt. So we're talking about huge amounts of stuff, and we have no idea where it is.
Wow. 1-800-989-8255 is a number. We're talking about Iraqi science this hour on Science Friday with Barwan Kalani and Elizabeth Stone. Let's see if we can get a call or two in before we have to go to the break. Let's go to Marvin in Fairfax, California. Hi, Marvin.
Hello there. Thanks for taking my call. I'm interested to find out if, in addition to the very real and pressing problems of rebuilding the physical infrastructure for science, if there's any hint that Iraqi society is going to suffer through some of the same problems we in the States suffer through with scientists having to compete for funding and attention with religious fundamentalists, and even just the battle for kind of the hearts and minds of people in general. Is there any questioning of just basic scientific knowledge and principles as we have to deal with here?
Dr. Barwan?
Mm-hmm. Thank you for, this is a very important issue to talk about. With all this trouble that we are facing at home, still our scientists and the professors are eager to do some research work and rebuilding their laboratories and libraries. And that's how virtual science library started, from the eagerness of Iraqis to start some good work. We got this initiative from our American friends from Academy of Science and AAA Science and Technology Policy. Being in such a situation and still working, that I think is a challenge for all Iraqis. Iraqis are willing to rebuild their own countries no matter what. Concerning the furniture of perhaps the equipment, we are trying hard with all the international organizations and the donor countries to help us out in providing some equipment that we need. One of the very good initiative came from Qatar Foundation. Qatar Foundation is allocating about $50 million for rebuilding our laboratories and revitalization of our higher education. That includes capacity building. So we are trying hard and we are still working, looking forward to get some more funds. Iraqi government is allocating an amount of money for reconstruction of structures. We have about $25 million a month for rebuilding our structures, I mean campus buildings and things. Again, we have a very ambitious program right now in Iran, which is allocating about $100 million for scholarship, sending abroad our young students, the smart young students, to do their PhDs abroad in high standard universities, and so that's why I'm here, actually, to make this program to run properly with high standard American universities.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're listening to Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. Talking with Barwan Kalani, who's Deputy Minister in the Ministry of Higher Education and Scientific Research in Baghdad, Elizabeth Stone, Professor of Anthropology at Stony Brook University, our number 1-800-989-8255. Dr. Kalani, tell us a little bit about more about the Iraqi Virtual Science Library, what it is and how it may help efforts to rebuild science.
All right. Iraqi Virtual Science Library is one of the main projects that running in higher education of Iraq. This program came as an initiative, as I told you, from our American friends in Academy of Science and IIIS Science and Technology. So I was here last year, in August last year, when we discussed how to implement this project. We chose 7 universities to be on our program to get access to 17,000 scientific books and periodicals. So now 7 of our universities are getting the benefit of using online books via this very vital program. Today we had discussed our roadmap of how to expand the project to let a lot more students and faculty members get the benefit out of it. And I think we are doing very well. What we've done today, we set up an agenda for our training courses for librarians, IT experts, as well as engineers for maintaining some of the hardware that we're going to use. Some microsystem companies donating some servers for this program. We are hoping to get those servers very soon to be allocated in all the universities that are on our program. Mm. The support from the Department of State was very, very important. We got a lot of support, and they were taking it into their consideration.
I have to rudely interrupt Dr. Kalani to take a break, but we'll come back and talk more about Iraqi science. And hopefully we'll also talk about their Iraqi robots a little bit later, some of the robots that are in Iraq helping to aid the soldiers there. So stay with us. We'll be right back after this short break. You're listening to Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Ira Flato. We're talking about the state of Iraqi science this hour with Elizabeth Stone, Professor of Anthropology at Stony Brook University, and Barwan Kalani, Deputy Minister in the Ministry of Higher Education and Scientific Research in Baghdad, Iraq. Our number 1-800-989-8255. We just have a short bit of time. Dr. Barwan, if you can give me the 3 top priorities for science research in Iraq, what would they be?
3 top priorities for science and research. One of the priorities, as I was talking about, is this providing the best libraries that the scientists and researchers can use. Our help came from Iraqi Virgil Science Library. This is one of the things. I'll talk about the topics that take the priority after I mention a few things more about Iraqi Virgil Science Library, how it works, and where did we get the fund for this program and the periodicals that we get the access to. Is that okay if I talk about this?
Quickly.
Okay. So Iraqi Virgil Science Library is a digital library established to provide Iraqi universities and research institutes with access to an outstanding collections of science, which among these collections is American Chemical Society, American Physical Society, American Institute of Physics, Mathematics and Science, Environmental Science, Abisko Publishing, and Alvesar Publishing books. A lot more. I don't want to spend time on that. So a lot of scientists and engineers, computer sciences, they get the benefit of this. So its goal is to help rebuild the educational infrastructure and economy in Iraq. The fund came support this successful project came mostly from Department of State and Department of State Defense. Defense Ministry. So the seed money came from those two ministries, and of course the help of from the AAAS and Academy of Science. Okay, the top priorities for research part, I would say it's environmental sciences. You know, we've been suffering. We went through three wars, big wars. So we've been suffering from pollution in air, water, and as well as soil. So environmental science research projects are the priorities. Today, actually, I was talking about this this subject, and I mentioned desertification that we are suffering from now. Our weather's been polluted by all those dust storms. It's only because our desert is expanding. So this comes one of perhaps I'll give it the priority to work on. Marshes is another project to work on. We have plenty of other challenges to think about, like how to improve our economic resources. We have a lot of minerals never been explored. We have areas need to be explored for oil. So we have a lot as a priority.
Well, I want to wish you good luck in those priorities, and thank you for taking time to be with us. And
thank you so much.
We'll talk to you again, Dr. Barwan Kalani, Deputy Minister in the Ministry of Higher Education and Scientific Research in Baghdad. Also, Dr. Stone, thank you for taking time to be with us.
Sure.
Elizabeth Stone, Professor of Anthropology at Stony Brook University in Stony Brook, New York.